This is episode number 32 with VP of Franchisor Relations at FranChoice, the man, the myth, the legend, Trent Halverson. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. All right, everybody, I'm shaking with excitement to present this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast with you. My guest today, Mr. Trent Halverson, is quite literally one of the best hype men I know. When I've been at FranChoice conferences, nobody gets the group more hyped than Trent. One of his secrets, if you know Trent, is he's a big fan of Red Bull. So in an effort to hype this episode up and introduce Trent in the way I've seen him introduce so many others, I've literally chugged two Red Bulls and my heart feels like it's about to pound out of my chest, but very excited to bring this episode with Trent to you in the audience. Trent is someone that I thought would be great to have come on the podcast because he has a very unique perspective of the world of franchising and his role at FranChoice, where I'm a member of their network of consultants, is to, number one, develop relationships with all of the franchise companies in the FranChoice portfolio. And secondly, to kind of vet other franchise companies that are interested in working with FranChoice. And for me, one of the reasons I knew FranChoice was the best fit for me when I was making a transition into consulting was that they work with the highest quality franchisors, and they're actually fairly selective about what franchise companies they'll work with. That's something that's very important to me as I'm helping people evaluate franchise opportunities. If I'm going to introduce someone to a franchise company and recommend that, you know, they learn more about a specific franchise opportunity, I want to have confidence that it's a fantastic opportunity. It's a company with great leadership that's well capitalized, that's got great systems and processes and provides amazing support for their franchisees. And that's something that I know FranChoice takes very seriously as well. So we were very much aligned with that. And it's really Trent's role to, again, develop and maintain relationships with these franchise companies and also, you know, evaluate whether or not a franchise company may be a good fit to work with FranChoice. So Trent goes into some details around, you know, what he's looking for in franchise companies that may or may not be a good fit with FranChoice, and share some of his insight and what he's learned over his 8+ years working with FranChoice. Trent also talks a little bit about leaving a very successful career in corporate America, working for a large corporation, how he got to the point of wanting to make a transition into, you know, a more entrepreneurial venture in the world of franchising, and shares how he dealt with and processed through some of the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that accompanies any sort of a decision that involves leaving a good paying job that he was in for a long time and was quite frankly just very comfortable in. So you won't want to miss this episode. It's packed full of some great information, and Trent's just an amazing guy with an infectious personality. So I can't wait to go ahead and drop into this episode with Trent Halverson. He just told me he's got his coffee and looking forward to a good conversation. So Trent, man, really appreciate you joining me for the podcast. I was thinking you'd be a great guest to have come on and just talk a little bit about, you know, your experience in general, but also kind of what you do at FranChoice, which, you know, for my listeners, they know I'm a part of the FranChoice organization. So I thought it might be cool to just, you know, have you share a little bit of your insight, talk a little bit about what you do at FranChoice, how you help us as consultants out, but also, you know, kind of what you look for in franchise companies. So, but before we dive into that, I mean, I know some of the people listening in know you and are familiar with you, but for anyone that maybe doesn't know you, share a little bit of your kind of background and how'd you get involved in franchise and franchising, and how'd you kind of get to where you are today?
So started off a career in Best Buy. It was one of those things in high school, you respond to somebody that had hiring, now hiring sign, you respond and you get picked up and then you're thrown on the sales floor. Working with a great company like Best Buy, and you think it might last a year or two. Come college, you're going to drop that habit and move on to something else. But really, it was a great organization to start off when I was just 17 years old, and learning how to sell and really relationship sell. You know, if you think about it, 25 years ago, I was selling VCRs, tube TVs in the video department. So it was great for a young individual learning how to sell and really have conversations with people and trying to figure out what they're trying to accomplish with the VCR, with the TV, with a camcorder. So grabbed on to Best Buy, young, kind of worked my way through the leadership roles inside the stores, and then had great opportunity to relocate out to California, over to Ohio, and then back to Minnesota, all with the company. And ended up spending some time, several years out of the corporate office, and kind of understanding what the corporate environment was like. So that 17 years really set me up to have the opportunity to hop on board with Franchoice. And luckily enough, they're about 2 miles apart. And Jeff was looking for somebody that didn't necessarily have deep roots in franchising.
Okay.
Because he thought he could educate, and he did someone. So had the opportunity, and that career at Best Buy was kind of winding down. A lot of my friends were kind of going on to chapter two after, you know, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, some of those guys looking to do something else in their career. And that was right where I was, and took the leap of faith and grabbed onto something special here at Franchoice. And, you know, 8 years later, almost, where we are today.
So it's been about 8 years since you transitioned out of Best Buy and into Franchoice, and we'll get into a lot more all things Franchoice here shortly, but Best Buy is actually headquartered there in the Minneapolis area. Is that right?
Yeah. Right down the road.
Yeah. Well, I mean, similar, I guess, kind of to how I got started right out of college, went to work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car, and I didn't spend, you know, that much time there. I was there for about 3 years, but kind of like you said, I mean, learning how to develop that relational sales kind of ability, that's probably one of the biggest things I took away from Enterprise. And I think that's a skill that, you know, you take with you just in life, but in any, you know, other role in business that you're ever going to have. And I would imagine it was pretty similar with Best Buy in that, you know, you've got a pretty short period of time to interact with someone and get to know them and develop a little bit of rapport. And then, you know, obviously help them make the right decision for whatever it is they're shopping for. And that was similar at Enterprise. I mean, we were kind of, our performance was gauged largely off of our ability to quote unquote sell different options, right? So whether that's the insurance or the roadside assistance, or maybe you upgrade them into a pink Camaro or whatever. But you've got like 3-4 minutes while you're kind of filling out someone's paperwork to, you know, get to know them a little bit, and then start kind of making some of these recommendations. And the people that could figure out how to develop a relationship quickly and build some rapport usually were the top performers in that regard. So I can imagine that has benefited you in a big way, you know, well beyond your days of working on the sales floor and selling at Best Buy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that component's very strong. And then with Best Buy, they're very open book and share. Every store had P&Ls and understanding what components, right? Your cost of goods sold, your labor, all of these, the overhead. You saw that as a store manager, and you're able to manage your own P&L per location or at the district level, managing, you know, a dozen or so stores too from a P&L.
Yeah, no doubt. And now that I think about it, one of my older cousins who I've always looked up to, he's actually been on the podcast before, literally probably one of the best sales guys I've ever met. And not in like a used car salesman kind of way, just, you know, relationship development. I mean, but the guy could literally go out and sell anything. But it was either Best Buy or Circuit City, but that's where he worked in college and was in the electronics department. And, you know, I know he's told me that that's where, you know, he really learned a lot of kind of the skill set that he's taken on to numerous other ventures with him, and gives that kind of experience a lot of credit for that. So it's very cool. But, you know, talk to us a little bit more about how And I know you kind of explain how you got to the point of just kind of, you know, ready for your next opportunity. So how did you get introduced to Franchoice? You mentioned Jeff earlier. That's Jeff Elgin, who's the founder of Franchoice. How did that come about? Was it totally happenstance or was it more intentional?
They had hired a headhunter looking for to fill this role. And okay. He had glanced at my LinkedIn and I looked back at his and, you know, a couple of days later he reached out and we ended up connecting and had a good conversation. He's like, you know, I got to get you in front of the folks over there. And over the course of about 2 months, just a lot of conversation and kind of feeling each other out, you know, this franchising world and environment is a little bit different than a corporate.
Definitely.
So just taking the time, you know, my exposure to franchising, I think up till now was McDonald's, Burger King, right? You kind of look around, you kind of go, I can spot some of these folks. And that was pretty much the gist of it. But so many things from my previous career transition and really connected the dots. So it was great.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, you know, if you knew much about franchising prior to joining Franchoice. And I thought it was an interesting point you mentioned earlier where you said Jeff was kind of intentionally looking for someone that maybe didn't have a lot of experience in franchising. And I could see how that would make sense. But so it sounds like you weren't very versed in franchising other than what most people think before they kind of get into it, which is, oh yeah, franchising, that's fast food, right? I mean, that's kind of franchising in a nutshell. Obviously, we know there's so much more to it. So what was it about, you know, once you kind of started meeting Jeff and the folks at Franchoice, what was it that kind of piqued your interest and said, you know what, I think this is the right move for me?
Yeah, you know, I think it's several things, but I think the opportunity to look at a franchisor and somebody growing a brand. And when I started with Best Buy, there's probably 200 stores and saw it grow well over 1,000, right? So I love that story. You know, so the franchisor point of view of franchising is attractive, but then also on the business ownership, on the franchisee, to have the roadmap, to have the supporting systems that franchisors offer, you know, it was attractive to me. So I, you know, it's kind of the culmination of both, that it's just great to see franchisors grow and be successful. And in order for that to happen, they have to have the successful franchisees and watching those individuals for the most part, or investors have successful businesses, make that franchisor successful. And that's the passion that I have for business ownership.
Yeah. It's to me, it's a fascinating way of doing business. And similar to you, I kind of fell backwards into franchising, and I've told my story on the podcast, so I'm not going to bore everyone listening with it again, but you know, I didn't know much about it, but as soon as I kind of got plugged in and started figuring out how it works, I mean, I was intrigued, and a lot of the same reasons that you just described. I mean, you're hard pressed to find other business relationships out there where there's as much alignment as there is between, you know, a good franchisor that's focused on the right things and good franchisees. I mean, that alignment is about as strong as you're going to find. And to me, that's one of the things I find most fascinating about it. It's a great way for the franchisors to go about growing their business. But, you know, for an aspiring entrepreneur or even an existing entrepreneur, business owner, it's a great way to add another business or finally take that leap of getting into business for yourself. And it's a way that you can, in many cases, kind of fast track the ramp up and the learning curve and all of these things, and really just a win-win scenario. And that's something I'd like to have you speak to a little bit more as we get into the conversation, is just kind of, you know, what are some of the key characteristics that you've learned over the years that great franchisors have? Because a lot of people that I talk to, you know, they kind of intrigued by franchising, but they also come into it, you know, very, very cautiously, thinking that, you know, hey, if I talk to a franchise company, they're going to like really be trying to sell me. It's almost like when you pull up on a used car sales lot and you're like, is anyone, you know, running towards me right now? Like, are they going to take me into the back office and, you know, who knows what? So I know that's not how good franchisors operate, but it's something I'd like to have you speak to. But before we jump to that, I'm curious, you know, if you could talk a little bit about, you know, when the time came to leave Best Buy and make the move to franchise, I can only imagine that there was some hesitation, some fear, some uncertainty, some doubt. I mean, it's only human nature, right? When you're leaving something that you've been doing for a long time, comfortable with. So talk to us a little bit about what that looked like for you and how did you kind of press through some of that and ultimately kind of make this leap?
Absolutely, uncertainty and some fear, right? Because you're going from a place of calm and of what you know, not only did I know the corporate environment over at Best Buy, I knew what happened in just about every store every day. I could go in any type of role and operate in such. And coming from my father, who was a school teacher for 40, 45 plus years, you know, getting in, leaving a job that had security, you know, a lot of questions came from my father as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And it was just one of those things that it just felt right. Right. The number of conversations with the team here at Franchoice, with the board of directors and just the reassurance of the foundation of the company, what they do on a daily basis, it just felt right. And that's, you know, I say that in hindsight saying it was just something that you go, I feel comfortable doing this.
Yeah.
And that's just about all I can say was the conversations made it feel like it was the right move to do. And it has been, and the work and the conversations, everything is played out previously. So, yeah, I think sometimes you just have to jump and see what happens. And, you know, luckily I had several friends and other coworkers do that previously. So I knew there was a chapter two.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, a lot of my friends and relatives said, you know, there's a lot of retailers, Target's here, a lot of other great big box retailers that still exist today. But it felt right getting into something else that still had a lot of strong components that I was used to.
Yeah, no doubt. I think there's always, you know, a leap of faith involved in any sort of a transition like that. It's super hard to get outside of your comfort zone. And to your point, you could have probably easily gone and, you know, gotten a very similar job at another big retailer and just kind of kept doing what you were doing. And if that's what you wanted to do, then of course that's perfectly fine. But I think, you know, it sounds like you did a lot of due diligence, talked to all the folks at Franchoice, you know, really took the time to kind of think about it from a logical standpoint. But I think with these types of decisions, there's always an emotional component as well. And you got to kind of trust your gut, you know, so you said it just kind of felt right. And I know as I'm working with people and helping them investigate franchise businesses, that's a big part of it, right? I'm not talking about, you know, going to Vegas and putting it all on black, you know, those types of gut calls, but we're talking about, you know, you're going to be able to gather the information, but at some point you're still going to have to make that jump. And that's where you got to really trust your gut and also trust yourself and have some confidence in yourself that you're going to be able to execute based on everything you've learned about the opportunity.
Yeah, it is. It is making a gamble on yourself and saying, hey, everything I have learned in the past is going to help me out in the future. So, yeah.
So I guess it'd be a good time now to maybe explain to those listening in that don't know what your role at Franchoice is and what are kind of your key responsibilities.
Yeah. And I'll say there's pretty much two, there's more, but the highlight is two is working with the portfolio franchisors that we do work with and help them out when they encounter a problem or they're looking for best practices. Typically, as you know, COVID hits and now all of a sudden it becomes virtual discovery days. Well, how do we share amongst the franchisors we work with those best practices quickly?
Sure.
I'm kind of that conduit that is talking with senior care companies, boutique fitness companies, service-based companies, and can kind of share and put out communication around best practices pretty quick. So working with our existing franchisors and, you know, around the sales process, around onboarding new franchisees typically, but sometimes it's an operation or a support question and even sometimes partnering up a senior care franchisor with a boutique fitness to say, hey, you guys are trying to accomplish the same thing or you already have some conversation. And that's another thing we can get into around just the environment. The folks in franchising are so willing to share,
yeah,
whether it's the same industry or across industries.
Absolutely.
So that's half of kind of that support communication, more so the folks that we do work with. And the other half is talking to franchisors that are looking to grow with consultants. And so looking at franchisors that would like to work with us is pretty much the other half of what I'm doing.
Yeah. And that's a big part of why, you know, I thought it'd be great to have you come on to talk a little bit about. So, cause I know franchise gets approached by a lot of franchise companies, right? Where they're like, hey, we'd love to work with franchise. And I know that you and franchise are pretty selective about the franchisors that you agree to work with. And for me, and I'd been in franchising for a while, so I had some insight into, you know, franchise and other, you know, somewhat similar groups or networks that are out there. And when I decided to make the transition into consulting, it was a no-brainer for me that, you know, franchise was where I wanted to go, and luckily they were willing to have me. But a part of that was I knew that they were very, very selective about the franchisors that they work with, which for me is important, because if I'm introducing someone to a franchise company and saying, hey, based on everything I've learned about you and what you're trying to accomplish, I think this is a brand that could be very interesting to you. I want to be confident that brand's got it together, right? That they're going to have a very strong likelihood of someone being successful if they, as the franchisee, put their head down, do the work, and follow the systems and processes. So that's all kind of a big lead up to, you know, I'd love to have you share a little bit more about, you know, what are you looking for when you initially talk to a franchise company about whether or not it's a good fit for them to work with franchise?
Yeah. And we do, we get approached almost daily from a franchisor or folks that aren't even a franchise yet. They might have two or three or five corporate and say, hey, where do I go? And right, where do we plug in when it's time to call you? And those are folks I'd love talking to as well, just helping them get started and kind of connect the dots of
sure,
where they should go, and kind of that early step in that process can help them for much success in the future. But, you know, I think similar to the onboarding process, when I came to franchise, that 2-month time frame of having a lot of conversations, I spend weeks and months with franchisors that finally do come into our system. But I think, you know, for a franchisor that's sitting out there right now going, you know, what's Trent looking for? Not to boil it down to four buckets, but the four buckets we probably start off in the first couple weeks. And then, you know, we discuss several more things, but I think the four big buckets that typically get tackled right away would be unit economics, right? There's mm-hmm. got to be a story around unit economics. What's my investment? Is it 2 million? Is it 200,000? Is it 90,000? And what does that look like from a return? And maybe that's sure, spelled out in an item 19, maybe it's not, but there's got to be a story around unit economics. So that would be bucket one. And, you know, number two would be territory. Sometimes they're looking to grow just in Florida. Sometimes it's just in the Southeast. Sometimes it's east of the Mississippi. Well, franchise, 75 fabulous consultants that are all over the U.S. and have candidates and prospects all over the U.S. So I'm looking for franchisors that are pretty much looking for U.S. development.
Yep.
And that's stressful for a lot of franchisors, especially if you're young, to support somebody in Florida and New York and California for maybe, you know, your first few placements. It can be tough, but yeah, we're looking for almost all open territory in the U.S.
Yeah, which makes sense from a franchise perspective, but I could see how it would be a little bit intimidating for some younger franchise systems, because, you know, you look at a lot of franchise systems and kind of their growth trajectory, and usually they kind of, wherever they're headquartered, wherever they started, they grow out from there. So I could see how that would be intimidating for some. All right. So we've got unit economics, we've got territory. What's the third bucket?
Would be validation. And this kind of can be validated by franchisees. It can be validation from business partners. It can be validation from an executive team. So sure, I think as you talk with your candidates about right? Having conversations and learning more and doing due diligence. That's what a candidate does. You know, I just say, hey, there needs to be a story around validation. People need to validate what you're saying on the phone. And several people will say the same thing. Maybe it's validating what's in writing. There's some type of validation focus to say, all right, is it more than just the founder telling me this?
No doubt. No, and it's so important, right? I mean, whether, you know, it's an individual, you know, investigating a franchise that they're interested in investing in, or for someone in your position saying, hey, does this partnership essentially make sense? Because, and I always tell the candidates I work with, I mean, validation is the single most important step of an investigation with a franchise. Because it's just that you're validating everything that you've been hearing. And most franchisors are very forthcoming and very transparent, but at the same time, you want to talk to the people that are walking the walk, that are living it, and make sure that everything you've learned is actually accurate. And that's how it, you know, works in real life. What's the old saying? Trust, but verify, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of times people, you know, hone in on franchisees. Validating with franchisees is a big one, but, you know, validating from a company that's doing the build outs. Hey, I'm hearing it's taking 12 weeks. Is that true? Oh, it's actually taken 19 because, you know, cost of goods went up and, you know, supply is actually down and the demand is up, you know. All right. So now it's 12 weeks to 18 weeks. Okay. Right. Probably going to fall somewhere in between, but that too can be validation of what you're hearing.
Sure. No doubt. That's a great point. I hadn't thought about it as much from that perspective. So, and so that's kind of part of what you're involved in as you start talking to a new franchisor, is taking a deep dive into all aspects of the validation.
Yeah. Yep. And then last but not least is the sales process, right? Mm-hmm. So oftentimes founders, CEOs, presidents, they understand what they have. They love the product or service that's in front of them. And what I'm looking for is an individual that can start off with point A and get us to point Z and really put out there all the information that a candidate would need to make their educated decision on that opportunity. So sometimes it's, hey, I'm going to hop on the phone and talk to them blue in the face and answer all their questions. What I'm looking for is a very laid out, detailed process that really puts out there all the information needed.
Yeah, a methodical process where someone can kind of go through it step by step versus just jumping on a phone call. And like you said, talking to you blue in the face, or like, you know, oh, I've got this question. And then, you know, the franchisor reps just kind of fielding questions and you really don't accomplish much, or it takes you five times as long to accomplish what you could with a good process. And, you know, you use the term sales process, and that's kind of the lingo within the industry, but, you know, it's really a discovery process. And that's what a lot of franchise companies refer to it as. And this is, I guess, a good time to segue into what I alluded to earlier. So, you know, what is kind of a good methodical discovery process, you know, look like, maybe from a candidate's eyes, if that makes sense?
Yeah, you know, I think what I'm looking for, and obviously the candidate has got some say in it as far as like a time, but from a franchisor, you know, we see anything from on average a 6 to 10 call it step education process, where, you know, it's going to start out pretty much broad overview. There's a history. There's some type of getting the foundation of what the opportunity is laid. And then the different components, if it's marketing, and maybe there's real estate and development process. Maybe it's the supply factor of, you know, if it's a service base, where are these things coming from? So, I think on average, it's probably 6 to 8 steps of educating on what that product or service, that opportunity has. And somewhere along the line, yep, absolutely, validation comes to play. And then some type of, you know, I think most people are familiar with Discovery Day. We like Meet the Team Day or Confirmation Day happens typically towards the end, if not the end as well. But yeah, you know, making sure they get all the strong components, and you're not giving somebody the playbook, right? That comes after you sign, but you're giving them enough information to feel confident that they have the resources, they have the experience, that if I jump on board, I feel good.
Yeah, and I think just a good streamlined process where there is some order to it. And, you know, I've worked in franchise development roles and definitely learned, you know, some lessons along the way in terms of how to better structure a process so that it's a better experience for the candidates that are looking at the particular franchise business, and also, you know, a better experience for, you know, the person in the development role. And it's not to get more sales, quote unquote. It's to, like I said, make it a good experience for everyone involved, right? The more structure there is to the process, the more exchange of information there can be, the more education can actually take place. If you just kind of jumped on a phone call with someone interested in franchise and was like, so what questions do you have? Like, you're going to go all over the place for hours and hours, and you're not really going to accomplish that much when it's all said and done. And I think the other thing that's probably worth noting here, I know I always stress this to candidates, and I'm sure it's come up on the podcast before, but the other reason this really isn't a sales process is because it's a mutual evaluation. Maybe not for all franchise companies, but for good, legitimate franchise companies, in my opinion, it's a mutual evaluation. Yes, they're setting the process up so that the candidate can learn what they need to learn, get their questions answered, figure out if it's a good fit for them. But they're looking at the candidate just as hard to see if they think that person's a good fit for them.
Oh, absolutely. And I see so many questions always, you know, pointed towards a franchisor. And I want to say the franchisor's got it tough because they are looking for the right partners, right? They're educating on what they're offering. Absolutely. But they're trying to say, you know, when times are tough, are they going to be able to rock and roll? When times are good, are they going to, you know, keep marching and trying to raise that bar? And are they going to improve the system?
Yeah, that's a great point.
They're looking for some strong partners.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, I've seen it. I know, I'm sure you've seen it over the years. I mean, franchisors will turn people away, even people that are like, hey, I'm ready to write you a check. I'm ready to, where do I sign? Yeah. I've seen it where they'll say no, that, you know what, we just don't think you're the right fit for what we're looking for. And, you know, when I do work with candidates that are very, you know, hesitant to talk to franchisors because they think, hey, you know, they're just going to try to sell me. They're going to sell me a bill of goods or whatever. Say not the franchisors that we work with, right? Because again, because of processes like what Trent just outlined, you know, we want to make sure that we're working with the best of the best in terms of their integrity and the leadership of the company and just the way they view franchising. There are plenty of franchises out there that I'm sure would take a check from anyone. What's the old saying? If it's the mirror test, if someone can fog a mirror, they'll sell them a franchise. But it's not really the way good franchise companies that are focused on long-term sustainable growth. Yep. It's not the way they approach it.
And even if they do take somebody, I think they learn pretty quick that moving forward, they need to identify who works well in their system. You know, I think both franchisees and franchisors make mistake, you know, grabbing a franchisor that's not a good partner, vice versa, grabbing a franchisee. And you quickly learn, like, that's one of the fastest lessons I think that you can learn. And then, right, then you got to make it right and move forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I've been a part of two different franchise organizations, and I mean, both of them evolved over time. And I think that's one thing. I mean, for me personally, we're involved in several franchises that we own. One of the things we look for is, hey, does this company and does the leadership seem to have the ability to evolve and grow and improve over time? Do they listen to their existing franchisees? Do they look for feedback and suggestions as to how they can improve the business? And part of the way most franchise companies evolve is they do figure out over time, you know, who's more likely to be a good fit as a franchisee. And, you know, of course, it involves things like, you know, do they have the right business acumen for the business? Are they a good fit for the actual role that the franchise owner is meant to carry out? Do they have the right skill set and personality? But another big piece of it is, are they going to be a good culture fit? You know, are they just going to mesh well with the other franchisees and the culture that the franchise company has created? So those are all good points. I mean, anything else that you would add to that in terms of kind of key things that you're looking for to say yay or nay, you know, it's a good fit for franchise?
Yeah, that list goes deeper, but I think for folks just kind of tuning in and kind of going, you know, what are the four big buckets, that would be at.
So maybe one other question on this note, and then we'll move to something else. Is there anything that is kind of like an immediate red flag to you where if you get introduced to a franchise company and you see this or don't see this, you're like, you know what, we don't even need to go any further. I can already tell you it's not a good fit.
You know, I think that's a great question. And I think typically my mind comes from curiosity. Yeah. And I think I'm always willing and able to say, hey, tell me about this, right? And you know, red flag, I think is a strong word, but you know, maybe it's litigation or maybe it's an item 19 that just doesn't pan out with the investment level. And I'm always able to ask the question and listen to see what might be, you know, behind it and then go from there. And I think again, you know, what's right for franchise, you know, doesn't mean it's right for everybody. So,
sure.
You know, I think if something catches somebody off guard, I think you just have to ask questions. You know, I think of like a banana on a shelf. Some people want it a little bit of green because they're going to eat it on Friday. Some want it yellow today because they're going to eat it on the drive home.
Yeah.
And some are making banana bread, so they want them almost, you know, so it's like, what's right for you? And I don't want to say I know what's right for everybody, but when I see something that looks different than I've seen in the past, I just ask the questions and then listen, because I think that's important. If I come in with curiosity, that's one thing, versus coming in with my mind made up, then I might as well not even ask.
That's a great point, and I think a really good answer to that question and a good approach, because you know there usually is a story. It doesn't mean the story's good or that it's been handled the right way, but it's important to stay curious and understand, you know, what's really going on. And, you know, I have this conversation with candidates from time to time, especially if it's related to an FDD, a franchise disclosure document. That's fantastic. And it's one of the beautiful things about franchising. It's regulated, you know, there's documentation. You get a lot of insight into, you know, these companies in a legal fashion before you ever get to the point of making a decision. But at the same time, the FDD doesn't always tell the full story, right? So getting to know, all right, well, what really happened that resulted in some of the things you may see in an FDD, again, not always going to be a good answer or the right answer, but at least kind of understanding the full story. And, you know, I think you brought up a good point too, which is, you know, I don't think anyone at Franchoice would say that, you know, the only franchise companies you should invest in are franchise companies that, you know, work with Franchoice. I mean, there are great franchise companies out there that maybe just for one reason or another, it doesn't make sense for, you know, them to be affiliated with Franchoice. I had that conversation with a candidate yesterday, actually. But no, man, really, really good insight here, and appreciate you sharing kind of some of what you're looking for, because I think it's definitely of interest to, you know, folks listening in, and especially anyone that may be investigating or interested in investigating franchises themselves.
Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast, and that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life, and it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode.
Another subject I'm curious to get kind of your input on, COVID. So, you know, from your perspective, how has COVID impacted franchising? What are some of the good things and the bad things that have resulted from COVID, and kind of where do you see it going from here? Obviously, we understand you don't have a crystal ball, but you know, what are you kind of seeing from where you sit?
Yeah, and you know, I'd love to pull up an email and see when I sent. I remember sending an email to all the franchisors we work with and just said, hey, do you know how to run a virtual discovery day? And this was before a lot of that stuff was shut down, but it was just kind of that thought we were having at the office. And I said, I need to share this with the franchisors, and probably had 100 responses. Wow. We're working on it. We're talking about it. We've done one already. We have templates, right? So it was those folks already there. And I think that just goes to show that the franchisors are thinking ahead. And really, you know, I think COVID, I don't want to say the strong get stronger, but one of the things that I really not enjoyed, one of the positive things that I like seeing is the ability for franchisors to rally franchisees, get feedback and pivot and change virtual type of opportunities for the end user of systems and virtual components for candidates and new franchisees. Just pretty unreal. And then watching some sectors just explode, anything yeah. touching home, like those franchise systems were off the charts, you know, yeah. painting or home improvement or kit, like all of these things.
Shelving's up, I can tell you that.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Anything, because people now are spending more time in there. So handyman stuff, like all of those businesses took off. And that's great. You know, on the fitness side or some of the retail side, did it get tough? Absolutely. And you found franchisors, the stories I heard going and helping with concessions and different things with yeah. the landlords and speaking on behalf of franchisees and saying, look, you know, we're in several of your buildings. This is what we need. And having that partnership versus having to do that as an independent business owner, you kind of have that big gorilla behind you or mm-hmm. the dog barking when you're talking to somebody, I think was great to see. And then I think, you know, just they're nimble and the ability to shift in a moment's time and have support was great. And now what we're seeing on the brick and mortar side, right, they kind of took maybe a little bit of a hit in some sectors still strong
yeah.
Throughout COVID, but the ones that kind of took a hit now are the new franchisees coming in or the folks that had one unit and now are signing a lease for another and yeah. are getting crazy deals. And that's awesome to see. And we know, let's just take fitness, you know, in regards to COVID, we know that most common, the fit and the healthy manage better through that. So
sure.
I think now memberships are starting to increase and will over time, whether it's a vaccine or something happens, we're going to see this influx of people in this health and wellness sector kind of make sure they're taking care of themselves and then they'll benefit. So
no doubt.
I it's not doom and gloom, and I don't have any of the negative stories. I think just a lot of positive came from it because it showed the strength of what you can do when you have a lot of individuals coming together as a part of a team to shift and move and increase performance.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, COVID has really highlighted a lot of the things that have always been beneficial in terms of being a part of a good, strong franchise organization, right? A lot of the things you just mentioned, right? I mean, as a franchisee, instead of being completely out there on an island by yourself, trying to figure out how to navigate these uncharted waters of a global pandemic, you've got other franchisees in the exact same spot as you. You've got a franchisor, a team of people that are dedicated and motivated to help you continue to be successful. And I think it really, like I said, just kind of underscores, you know, what, you know, we would have always said are the benefits of franchising versus, you know, maybe a standalone business. But in times like this, I think it's even better, right, to have that type of support and those types of resources. And I mean, I know having this conversation with candidates, I mean, you kind of alluded to this, you know, just because there's a pandemic going on and there's uncertainty, I mean, there's always uncertainty, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, none of us know what tomorrow's going to hold. So that's always the case. If that's your reason for not making moves, then that's always going to be a reason. But this can actually be a fantastic time to investigate franchises because, to your point, some industries have actually spiked like crazy. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you want to base your decision on because, you know, who knows how long that spike could last for a particular industry. But I think as far as your ability to investigate a franchise and really understand who you'd be partnering with, never been a better time, right? Because going back to validation and talking to franchisees, like they're going to tell you if they feel like their franchisor did a great job of supporting them and helping them kind of figure this out. Or if they don't feel that way, they're going to tell you that too, right?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for
sure. So you get a very good sense of kind of who you're getting into bed with, and you want to do that in good times as well. But I think in bad times, it's easier to get a really clear picture of, you know, what type of partnership you're looking at between franchisor and franchisee. So I agree. I mean, it's been, you know, certainly not, you know, like the most fun year with quarantining and all of that. It's been an interesting ride, and I'm sure it will continue to be for a while. But yeah, there's not like a whole lot of negatives that I can really point to and say, you know, as far as franchising goes, you know, COVID's just, you know, totally wrecked it. It really hasn't. I think in a lot of ways it strengthened it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things too is that mindset, right? I think early on, I shared the story, I think back in March, April, oftentimes I'd turn my volume, my ringer on loud, and then I had the ESPN app and it seemed like it would go na na na. And this is franchise owners, the baseball, the football, all these owners investing in people, and you'd look down at your phone and they just signed somebody else. And this is, nobody was playing, but the owners are making calculated investments in their people when they had no idea what the outcome was, but they were still investing. And that just, it was that positive daily reminder that says, hey, we're going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of just, it grows.
That's cool.
As you build that momentum.
That's a cool little trigger to kind of remind you that, you know, hey, the world's still spinning. There's plenty of other people out there making moves and looking forward and not just kind of, you know, hunkering down. And I remember my wife and I having a conversation, you know, very shortly after things with COVID started kind of shutting everything down. I mean, I'd literally just left my job and come to FranChoice, right? I was supposed to come out to training for a few days, and I get a phone call and they're like, hey, we're probably going to do this virtually. And I could tell Linda was kind of like filling me out. Like, are you having any second thoughts? Like, how are you feeling about this? I'm like, I'm good. Like, let's rock and roll. But I just remember my wife and I sitting down and kind of saying, look, obviously we have no idea how this is going to play out, how it's going to impact us, how long it's going to last. But what we can control is just that. What we can control. We can control our mindset. We can control, you know, how we respond, how we react. And, you know, we kind of agreed, like, whenever we get past COVID, whether it's 2021, 2022, whenever that time is, we want to be able to look back on it and say, we are much, much stronger now than we were before it happened. We don't want to be the people that roll over and let it happen to us. And, you know, just have nothing but excuses. And well, this is happening, so we didn't really accomplish anything this year, but it was COVID. So, you know, who could? I mean, you know, we've bought another franchise business. Our businesses are up 20% year over year. We've invested in commercial real estate. We got a baby due in December. Like, you know, it's been a hell of a year. You know, like, got some cool things done, and so many other people out there have too. That's certainly not just us, right? But yep. It's that difference in mindset and mentality. It's the growth mindset versus, you know, the limited mindset. And that's always the case, pandemic or not. So sorry, I just went on a tangent there, but
no, it's good. It's so important, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you hit on this earlier. I think it'd be cool to have you, you know, maybe expand a little bit when you kind of talked about just the, I guess, the culture, the kind of sense of camaraderie that you get in franchising, whether it's, you know, people part of the same organization or not. I mean, and that's, to me, one of the things that I've loved about franchising is just that, I mean, it's a tight-knit family. Even people that are technically competitors of each other, it's just a cool atmosphere. Talk to me a little bit more about what you've seen and your perspective on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And first, you know, I first exposed to this when I came on board, the amount of individuals reaching out saying, yeah, how can I help? What can I do? Right. So that was first and foremost. The day I started, it was overwhelming. And then from there, it was, you know, finding those brands that might not be a franchise yet. And maybe it's in the hair industry, maybe it's in the fitness industry. And you'd say, go talk to another hair in the and they open up about everything, or another fitness concept will share everything and tell them all about being in the franchise space. And it's just overwhelming. And then the feedback that I'd get after I made these introductions, they were just so thrilled to say, hey, they were sharing detailed stuff with, and it's just like unreal. Or when you have somebody saying, hey, I'm struggling with virtual discovery days, virtual meet the team confirmation days. And I say, hey, call this franchisor, and whether it's same industry or not, their ability to share and send documents and best practice, overwhelming time and time again. I've never had an opportunity where somebody has said, no, I don't want to help somebody else out, you know?
Right. Yeah. Or that's our secret sauce, not going to share it.
And, you know, going back to Best Buy, sometimes you'll have a store 2-3 miles away and one's successful and one's not. And you can't get those two stores to kind of open up to say, what are we doing? But here it seems like everybody is in the good of franchising as an industry, as a model to say, we all need to be successful. We all need to improve each other for this model to continue to grow.
Yeah, it's unique. It's something special. And I think another piece of it too is, you know, when you're in franchising, whether you're, you know, in a role like you're in or working for a franchisor, or if you're a franchisee or, you know, doing what I do, it's, you're surrounded by like-minded people, right? People that are driven, people that, you know, have more of this entrepreneurial mindset, the growth mindset, people that are afraid and scared, just like any human being is when it comes to making moves and trying new things. But, you know, they're comfortable getting uncomfortable. They're comfortable finding ways to push through the fear and the uncertainty. And I know for me, like, part of how I've continued to get more comfortable doing these sort of things is because I'm surrounded by other people that are taking the same types of action. And, you know, I'll kind of have moments where I'm like feeling pretty good, like, yeah, you know, we got some good stuff going on. And then I'll talk to someone else in franchising and they're filling me in on what they're doing. I'm like, shit, we got to catch up here. We're behind. Like, we've got to make some more moves. So it's like, I think just always kind of pushing the bar a little bit. And for me, I know how much I benefit being surrounded by like-minded people and people that are going to push me. And it's another reason that, you know, for me, knowing what I knew, FranChoice was the right fit for me. And, you know, when I came on board as a consultant, the outreach by other consultants, by franchisors, it was overwhelming. I mean, it truly was. And now, as a part of the organization, it's just so cool. I mean, everything that, you know, you and Linda and Jeff and Serge and everyone at the home office does, you know, it's a blessing. And it's just cool to be a part of that atmosphere and environment that you get with franchising. Well, look, man, this has been awesome. I really appreciate everything that you've shared with us. You know, want to just kind of start wrapping this up with a few kind of final thoughts that you may have. And I mean, I guess the first one would be, you know, like any advice that you might have for, you know, kind of the aspiring entrepreneur out there, maybe someone that was at a similar point to where you were, you know, at Best Buy and, you know, it's had a great run with it, but just kind of feeling like maybe it's time to try something new. But obviously there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt that comes with trying something new, especially getting into business for yourself. I mean, just everything you've learned through going through this yourself, but also through being involved in franchising, what advice might you give to someone in that position, but it's maybe a little bit paralyzed and doesn't know where to go?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, I think looking back just at myself, right, I call upon my father and he definitely throws some more questions out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you find a mentor and or an advisory board or maybe one of both. And I think the important factor is the mentor needs to be someone you want to be like or someone that is doing things that you think you want to do and be able to pick their brain on it. And the advisory board, same thing. If you're looking to become a franchisee and buy a business, then you need to find people that have already done that and learn from them.
Yep.
Finding folks that are maybe coworkers that haven't, you're going to have their mindset of, you know, different than those that are doing it now. So I think, you know, finding those that are currently doing it or have done it and having just curious conversations with them to learn more about it. And that's what I did. I started to call upon my friends and previous coworkers that have left and maybe some did go to another retailer and some have done other things and just picking their brains around what is it like to leave this comfy corporate job that I currently have. And through those conversations that help with the confidence to say, all right, not only now is the time, this opportunity is the right one.
So this is like a spur of the moment question, but I mean, how would you say your life has changed and improved since, you know, making that tough decision? Cause yeah, I mean, you just said for a lot of people it's comfortable, right? Yeah. So why would you want to leave something that's comfortable, you know, but how has your life been positively impacted by some of these decisions?
You know, oh, absolutely. I mean, my life's changed dramatically, but I think just the experience I brought, you know, right, I've gained over the last 8 years has just been phenomenal. And what I'm able to do and help others and connect the dots, I think is kind of what I've always done, just at a different level and on a larger scale. So I think taking the risk, the calculated risk, I kind of found the sweet spot, what I like to do, you know. My grandfather was a teacher. My dad was a teacher. My brother's a teacher. So I'm around these people that like to be around people and help others. And now I'm doing that just in the franchise industry. So I kind of own my home here doing very similar things on a different scale. So I think that's kind of what I would hone in on. Just, you know, most individuals kind of know who they are and what their passion and then you just have to go with it. Yeah. You know, I think sometimes you're in a job that you go, I can do, I can understand, and I can get through the day, I can get through the week. But those passions, and it might've been an age thing, right? You know, getting a little bit older and you kind of go, all right, do I want to keep doing this or have the ability to go do something else? And combination, and then just, taking that calculated risk and wagering on yourself. I think sometimes for individuals that takes a while to learn that, you know, individually, you can accomplish a lot when you put, you know, your bets on yourself. And that's what it takes typically to make that. But, you know, you look at folks coming from other countries into the U.S., that's a huge risk, right? They're leaving a comfort zone, coming in the U.S. and then starting business. Like, that's another, like, my wife came over with four suitcases. It was her mom, her dad, and her brother. It was four suitcases, four people. You know, that's a huge risk, but they understand kind of what they're getting into. And it's that, you know, being comfortable when you're uncomfortable.
And I love what you said earlier about, you know, finding mentors and kind of like a, you know, a personal board of directors of people that are already doing or have already accomplished things that you know you want to accomplish. And I think that's such an important point, right? Because, you know, if you had only sought out advice from people that were still working at Best Buy and had no intent whatsoever of leaving Best Buy, they'd have been like, you're crazy. What are you thinking? Yeah. Like, why would you ever do that? They would have given you a laundry list of reasons not to make a change and probably no reasons why you should. And it's not like it's bad to, you know, weigh the pros and the cons with any sort of a decision like that. But yeah, if you're only seeking advice from people that are not out there actively doing the things you know you want to do or at least try, then you're only going to get talked out of it 100% of the time.
Yeah, and I'll throw this out there too. And a lot of times that advisory board might not be your current network, you know, and utilizing social media or LinkedIn or any other resources, going down to your local business and saying, hey, can I talk to you? Can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you a coffee? And make those connections, you know.
Yep.
I'll use LinkedIn as a valuable tool. I thought I had created a product 10 years ago and I reached out to a guy that was just featured on a news station about making a dog leash with a squirt nozzle. So it was squirting the dog. I found his name from the news article, found him on LinkedIn. And I had like 3 hours of conversations with this guy around creating a product, making a patent, getting it to retail. And he was sharing everything. But that connection, I couldn't go to anybody in my current network because I didn't have anybody that had created a product.
Yeah.
And having that ability to outreach and kind of use him as an advisory board of, hey, do I really want to go down this road? was so valuable. And that's what I would put out to those folks looking at making a move, you know, looking at getting into business ownership, is finding those people that are doing it. Maybe they're in your network, maybe they're not.
Well, that's a great point, right? I mean, and it could be, you know, it could be a podcast. It could be, you know, books that you're reading, you know, could be the Path to Freedom podcast. I don't know, just a thought, but shameless plug. But yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, seeking out people, whether they're in your personal network or not, that you can learn from and benefit from their experience. That's awesome. And that's really kind of a good segue into what I call the lightning round. So kind of want to wrap it up with this. And this will tell me if you've ever listened to my podcast or not, Trent, if you know the lightning round questions, because these are the same 4 questions I ask every guest that comes on the podcast as we close it out. And so the first question is very simply, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received? And that could be in business or in life.
Yeah, from my father, best predictor of the future is the past. And I see it play over and over. And whether it's with my own kids or a business, best predictor of the future is the past.
Was your father a history teacher?
He was, and he was math.
Okay. All right. My mom's a lifelong history teacher. So that sounds like advice she's given me many, many times. And I just wish I was smart enough to start taking her advice at a younger age. But that's good. I like that. All right. Next question is, do you have any sort of a morning routine? Anything that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
Now, it's changed over the years. And right now, I have a 15-year-old daughter and then 3 boys under the age of 5. And that morning...
That'll change a morning routine. For
sure. But that morning time with the kids is kind of been my bread and butter, especially for the last 9 months, is just spending some quality time face-to-face. They're in great moods, so that helps me be in a great mood.
Definitely.
But that family connection right now is my morning routine.
I love that. That's such a good one. And I say this all the time here on the podcast, but I love asking that question because it's so different for everyone. And the point is not that, like, you know, there's this one kind of routine that if you do it, you'll magically be successful. It's finding what works for you. And I like the point you brought up, which is it's changed over the years, right? Your life changes, right? I mean, mine mornings were very different before, you know, I had a kid. We've got our second kid due in December. My mornings are going to change a lot, you know, after the second kid's born, right? But yeah, finding ways that you're setting yourself up for a successful day and you know, how that works for you. So that's great. I love that. What book are you reading right now? If you're reading a book?
I'm just finished. So I'm looking actually. So I'd love a recommendation.
I've got several.
And it's just this, I think the quiet before the storm. We've got the conference coming up. So I wrapped up a couple of weeks ago, and now I'm kind of in conference mode. So kind of clearing the plate here so we can focus on the upcoming conference in January.
Okay. Well, I'm reading a great book right now called Doesn't Hurt to Ask. It's by Trey Gowdy, who was a congressman from South Carolina, but he was a prosecuting attorney in South Carolina before that. So it's just about the power of questions and obviously listening to the answers to those questions. That's a good read. And then I just got delivered today, so this is my next one up, Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. So he just put a book out, and apparently he's like kept a journal for like 40 years. And so it's just kind of a memoir of his, but really just a lot of, I mean, his thought process, how he thinks about life, how he's gotten through hard times, good times. So anyways, I'm pretty excited to get into that one, 'cause he's a pretty cool dude. And I think it'll be an interesting read. So there's a couple recommendations for you if you have some time to get into a good book. So, all right, last question, and then I'll let you go. Simply, what is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
Ooh. So I think the definition to me is having the ability to have a lifestyle that is less stressful. And I think that comes from whether it's financially, mm-hmm. I think is a component, and I think spiritually of having some type of ability to clear mind and not get wrapped up. Yeah. And I think the freedom aspect might, I've taken a step forward when I eliminated some of my social media applications that I used to be heavily involved in. But I think that's a strong component for me. There's probably three or four that play a part. I don't know if I'm living it 100%, but I'm making strides to live in that freedom space. But I think that comes from several components, but love the question. I strive to be there.
Yeah, well, no doubt. It's a hard question, I think, to answer completely, because there are a lot of different components of freedom. And I think it's different for everyone, right? And I would tend to agree with you that, you know, most of us, you know, probably, you know, have some sort of freedom in our lives, but I don't know that it's the type of thing you always completely get to, right? Because, you know, again, if you're a growth-minded person, you're always looking to improve and get better. And so I don't know that there's a finish line, but I think it's a great thing to always be chasing, and probably, you know, no better drive than, you know, chasing your own personal freedom. So look, man, again, I really, really appreciate you dropping in on the Path to Freedom podcast with me. Just want to very quickly acknowledge you and say thanks a lot for everything you've done for me over the years. I've learned a ton from you since joining Franchoice. You and the entire, you know, Franchoice home office team has been just a huge resource to me. So really appreciate everything. Keep doing what you're doing, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Absolutely. Thank you. It was a pleasure. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, Trent.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number two, FRDM.com. Or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.